And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
Batter up! Welcome to No Bunts, the podcast for the casual baseball fan here on the Athletic Baseball Show feed. I'm Tass Mellis in studio in Atlanta. And joining me in studio, as always, making the magic happen, it's producer JD.
Hello.
What's up, JD? And my co-host all season long, all the way from Taiwan, it's Joel McMillan. Joel, how are you? And what is the background you have chosen for Zoom today?
Well, we're going to talk about basketball today, Tass. So I thought I would use the stadium background for the Milwaukee Beers from the movie Basketball.
That is glorious. hilarious stuff right there. This show, getting prepared for the show, definitely made me want to go watch Basketball. Joel, I barely remember it, to be honest, because I watched it in bits and parts. You are the movie connoisseur here, along with JD, of course. Can I get a quick rating, quick synopsis, quick feel of Basketball?
I'll just give you a quick rating. I'm going to give Basketball 3.7 out of 5. There's just some absolutely classic parts. Those guys crack me up. I think they're comedic geniuses, Trey Stone and Matt Parker. I thought this was kind of a weird movie for them to do, but some of the jokes don't age so well, but I mean, whatever. It's still a classic movie to me. I like it.
Thank you. I appreciate that. As Joel said, we're taking a little break from the normal podcast today. We're combining two sports, two of my personal loves, basketball and baseball. We'll discuss players that could play in both leagues, some things MLB can learn from the NBA. We'll have some basketball, baseball trivia a little bit later on, but mainly we'll be picking a few NBA rules and practices and playing out what would happen if those were implemented in MLB. So let's have some fun with that, Joel. The first rule and practice MLB could incorporate here, it's a strategic one. It's based on strategy. Position players can re-enter the game after being subbed out. How would this work in baseball, Joel? It wouldn't be unlimited, right? Because then we'd have Ohtani batting every third hitter. How would it all play out?
Right. So basically each team would be afforded three substitutions. And so a player could obviously enter the game and come back in. It would be used for bench players only, as well as relief pitchers as well. If teams wanted to do that, obviously there would be a limited number on it. I think this would be a very unique idea for a couple reasons. One, it obviously would completely change the strategy and dynamic of the game. It would take less emphasis away on matchups, which I think a lot of baseball fans actually don't kind of like. It kind of slows down the game a bit. So I think it puts, you know, more an emphasis on execution and strategy and adding more of an element of chess to this. So, yeah, there would be a limit of three. Tass, what do you think about this rule?
So we're saying position player can get subbed out. Let's say Mike Trout can get subbed out for a pinch runner, let's say. When he comes back, does he have to be in the same slot in the lineup, or he can come back for anybody? Because there we get a little
right, tricky. There's our test. You're already poking holes in this. I like it.
Yeah. That's why the three is somewhat palatable, because if it was unlimited, that's crazy talk. It just
of course. Yeah. It would be impossible.
Okay. Go ahead. What do you think about
I think the players would basically just, like, the subbed out players, like if it's a position player, they would be reinserted into their original spot in the lineup. Obviously, for relief pitchers, that they're not position players, so that's not an issue. But, you know, I don't know if teams would want to put in a bring in a pitcher later. Obviously, there's a higher risk for injury, so I don't know if that would make sense, but it would be available to teams. But I think it would be pretty good, you know, kind of from a fan standpoint, it'd be real dramatic. You know, a guy, you know, maybe gets subbed out in the sixth inning, but comes back in extra innings and gets the big, you know, the big game winning hit. And maybe he's got a really good record against a certain pitcher. I think it kind of makes for unique elements in the game.
And what about starting pitchers? Is this just for position players only? Like, yeah, I'm thinking of teams getting cute and saying, our guy pitches one inning, sit him down. He can come back and close later on.
It's up to you. You know, as I alluded to a minute ago, I think there'd be a much higher risk for injury, especially starting pitchers. Mm. I don't think you'd want to do that.
Okay.
If teams wanted to do that, I mean, that's obviously up to their discretion. But I think, yeah, you want to sub in any three substitutions you make, you know, puts an emphasis on speed, on defense, all different elements of the game would be impacted by these substitutions, but you would have to use them accordingly. I just think it would be a unique dimension a new dimension to baseball strategy.
Yeah, and I do like the restriction, you know, within this rule of having to come back in the previous slot in the batting order, because it would get it'd get too much. Because you could basically say, yeah, Mike Trout hits in the eighth, side is retired, and then he can come back and hit in the ninth, or like get subbed out and then come back and hit in the ninth for somebody else, essentially. So, yeah, not cool. But if you're coming back in that same slot, I don't mind it. I saw this this other little tweak that sort of plays into this from our friends at Reddit. If a player is hit by pitch, he can have a pinch runner sub in for him, and then he can take a spot back in the lineup. It would sort of discourage pitchers hitting guys. You know, just not that that's a huge problem, but, you know, just to add on to this. So the limit of three, it's interesting. Add a pinch runner gets, you know, comes on in, but the hitter can come back for him. Even if that was the rule, I think that's sort of interesting. Mm-hmm. Just to add a little bit more speed, there'd be a little bit more stock put into speedy guys. So that's interesting. All right, let's go ahead, Joel.
No, I was just going to say too, also, like, in terms of roster construction as well, when you're actually assembling a team, there would be much greater emphasis on getting the best, obviously, possible depth players you can get. Some teams just kind of fill out a roster, you know, and they don't have the greatest depth. So I feel by having substitutions, there would be even a greater emphasis on getting like the best possible depth pieces that you can get, which is important, you know, if you want to win a game.
Yeah, and correct me if I'm wrong, but speed was a very integral part of basketball, right? Because as you're talking, I cannot help, if you're with us on YouTube, but watch the basketball scene behind you and notice all the little things in the movie set behind with the ramps. But nobody looks particularly fast, I got to be honest, actually. I take back my comment about speed being integral. All right, let's move on to the next one. This next rule that MLB could implement from NBA. Players and managers are ejected after two technical fouls. So is this giving a little bit more of a leash to everyone, Joel?
It's giving more of a leash to the players and the managers. And I think in recent years, there's been a greater imbalance of power in the relationship between players, managers, and umpires. I feel umpires, you know, have a short leash with a lot of this. I know you're not supposed to argue strikes and balls and things like that, but, you know, Tess, you and I, we've seen, I feel like, a lot of quick hooks, a lot of quick ejections for players and managers that didn't warrant it, especially if they're getting calls wrong. And I think that by having this, you know, it's still, it's good for a couple reasons. One, it allows players and a manager to stay in the game. And yeah, it just gives leeway. And also, you want to see players in the game. What happens if a star player gets ejected? Like, let's say you go to watch Bryce Harper. Bryce Harper's got a bit of a temper. We all know that. Let's say he gets a bad call in the first inning, kind of slams his helmet down or has a bit of words. he's out of the game in the first inning. You as a fan, you paid good money to, you know, see Bryce Harper. Maybe he's your favorite player. Your day's ruined. But with this rule, basically he would get teed up like in a basketball game and Bryce is like, okay, cool, I'll chill out. Or, you know, I've got a better feel of the situation. I'll try to control myself going forward. And he's still in the game. I think this would be a big win for players, managers, and fans. Umpires, not so much, but, you know, they just have too much power. There needs to be more balance. What do you think?
Well, with the automated strike zone coming in, this gives them something additional to do. Why the heck not? Now, I find it interesting because you alluded to the fact that it might reduce the number of ejections. But I think you can argue that umpires sort of give players and managers a warning as it is. You know, like when Boone is in an umpire's face, you know, the number one ejectee, I guess, of managers, umpire will say, "You cut that out or else I'm tossing you." So I think there's like a warning built in. But I understand what you're saying. I don't see anything really wrong with this. I think you wanted to go even further, right, with players amassing technical fouls and then potentially having to sit later on in the year if they've amassed too many.
One of the ideas too is if a player amasses 10 technical fouls, he needs to sit out a game, or a pitcher will have to miss one start. And also if things get very heated, if a team is assessed two technical fouls in an inning, the hitting team, they would lose an out. Or if the team pitching is assessed two technical fouls, they would lose an out in the following inning when they hit two. So, you know, just to make it fair. But I think there needs to be better protection for the players and managers. Tass, you're right. You make a good point where you say usually there's a warning. But, like, there's just been so many bad calls. And even with the warnings, I feel that there's been a lot of quick ejections. And I hate seeing that. I don't like ump shows. It's not good for the product. It's not good for the fans. That's not what fans want to see. And fans also like that kind of traditional, you know, like when you watch those arguments from the 70s, 80s, and 90s, and, you know, managers and players were given much more leeway. They would get right in the ump's face, screaming, the ump would give it right back. But not all those players always got ejected. There's no way anything like that would happen in today's day and age. So by having these two technical fouls, maybe that allows for something like this. I know the fans would love to see it. My only concern maybe is that players and managers take advantage of this and they get more aggressive with umpires. That's obviously an unintended consequence of this rule possibly. But I still think, you know, kind of from a net benefit perspective, I think it would be good for the players and good for the fans and managers as well.
Yeah, you're walking a little bit of a fine line because managers or players might say, hey, if I've got a technical in my pocket, I'm essentially going to use it. But I think you could also, you know, play with that as well. If you're the umpires or your MLB, basically say, you know, if it's an overt action, like what happens in basketball, if it's over the top, you're still ejected. You can still get two technical fouls and in one instance. So I like that. I can't get on board with the in-game penalties that you're talking about, like losing an out if one team has two technicals, because you're giving a team, both players and managers, more leash, but you're also penalizing them more. And then now we're getting too far into the nitty gritty. Like, you know, the automatic strike or automatic ball that we're seeing with the new rules in today's MLB. I mean, I just don't like to see it. I just want to keep it as simple as possible. I don't mind the two technicals because you don't like the ump show. I get it. So I think it could reduce the number of ejections if administered properly.
Point though, I mean, in basketball, you, like, if you're assessed a technical or double technical, doesn't the other team gets a free throw or two free throws? Correct. So, I mean, like, I get what you're saying, but I mean, I don't see why this couldn't translate into baseball where you lose an out. Now, an out is much more valuable than a free throw or two free throws. I get with you there. Maybe there's a medium where it's not an out. There's some kind of other team penalty. I don't know exactly what that would look like off the top of my head, but yeah, maybe it's a bit too strict. Maybe it's a bit too cute. You're right.
Okay. All right. Well, listen, I think we're making some headway here. MLB is listening. A couple texts just to give a little bit of leash. As long as an umpire can say, that's worth two techs, you're gone. Because, yeah, we don't want an increase in yelling. Although I know you said, you know, back in the old days, you could yell an umpire's ear off and get away with it. I understand. But nobody wants to see all that much yelling. Even though in baseball it feels like a little bit more of a part of the fabric of the game than it does in the NBA. I'll move on to something I want to create in Major League Baseball. I'm creating a restricted area at home plate, much like they have in basketball, where you have a semicircle under the hoop to determine if a defensive player has their position and can draw a charge, or whether it's a blocking foul if the offensive player dribbles into a player who is in the restricted area. I want to create a circle around home plate because we've had some controversial calls around catchers blocking the plate and the rule there. And the rule is just a little too ambiguous. We've seen ridiculous calls overturned because it was determined that a catcher was blocking the path of a runner running in when he was just fielding the ball. The rule actually is you can't step on the plate. You can't be on the plate if the ball is coming in. You can't be sort of on the third baseline if the ball is coming in. But I think this rule of having a circle, just, you know, drawn around the plate, can fix that. And you wouldn't see a crazy one like we had with Jonah Heim recently with the Rangers. A catcher must stay out of that circle until the ball enters it. And then you're all good. Like, the circle is basically around the plate. He has to be outside that circle until the throw goes into it, and then he can enter it. Of course, there's a little bit of subjectivity there, but I think it's better than what we're seeing right now with that crazy Rangers one that was reversed, and we had Bruce Bochy going a little crazy. They're just being overturned. It's just very difficult to understand for catchers. And I think even though this doesn't solve it, a circle around home plate will prevent that. It's just a restricted area until the ball is thrown from the fielder and then you can go into it. What do you think about that, Joel?
I think it's coming from a good place.
Thank you.
I think the way you're welcome. And I think the way you lay it out, Tass, I get it. I think it sounds good in theory, but in practicality and in real time, I still think you're going to run into similar issues to what you're having today. And like you said, the rule is very, very ambiguous. And I think there's still a level of ambiguity in this. There's just maybe less of it.
Yeah.
So I would be on board with this. I would need to see what it would look like, though, like in an actual game, because they need to do something, because you can't, like, games have ended on these rules, Tass. And like you said, like, the fans don't like it, the managers, the players. And, you know, we were talking about the umps. Even the umps, I feel bad. Like, they're doing their best. They have to interpret the rule the way they see it. So there needs to be something better. I absolutely agree. Is a circle around home plate the answer? I don't know. I kind of feel that similar, although it's not basketball, but kind of the crease rule in hockey in the late 90s, where you couldn't even have a tip of your skate in there, or a goal was disallowed. That lasted for a year because I think the Stanley Cup ended on a very controversial goal. So that didn't last long. But yeah, I mean, I would be on board. I would like to see it. I wonder what the catchers specifically and the players would think about it. And if it can reduce catcher injuries, I think it's a good thing. But how would it look in real time? Like at a guy going full speed, a ball coming in? I don't know. I think it could go either way.
Yeah, I'm with you. The comparison to the can't put your skate in the crease rule, very good comparison. That's a good one, because right now, when they go to video review, when there's a play at the plate, like the Heim one that I just mentioned, they basically said you can't have your foot on the plate, even though you're allowing a path for the runner to run in. You can't have your foot on the plate. So the review is extremely technical. It basically said, that's the rule. And so this is also very technical, but I think it's a little bit more concrete. It should be a little bit more subjective, to be totally honest. I'm just trying to remedy something that's not going all that well right now through the first month. You should have the ability to go catch a ball if you're the catcher without the worry of being called for obstruction, for blocking the path of a guy running in. But really, that's what it comes down to. It's, can you go catch the ball? And I think just having that physical circle may help, but it could be a one-year experiment gone wrong too. Really, it's coming down to the subjectivity of the umpires and also the umpires in the review center. I think it depends on them. Their subjectivity is also being factored into this as well. It's just really weird to see a path being given to the player running in and all this being done to preserve the catcher. But I don't know. I think I'd give it a shot. Maybe it's even a semicircle. Maybe that's the idea. So you have to kind of stand behind the plate or outside the circle if it's in front of it. I know it's not perfect. None of this is perfect. We're working through it here, yeah. Joel.
We're riffing.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
All right, next one. You like the single elimination game idea for the sixth seed in each league. So basically you're saying at the end of it all, you want 6 versus 7 for the sixth seed, a single elimination game, much like they have in the play-in tournament in the NBA.
Yeah. I'll be honest, like as a casual NBA fan, I don't like the play-in thing. I don't like the idea of, I think it's the 9 and the 10 seed playing to get in. I just personally, as a sports fan, as a casual basketball fan, I don't like that because I feel it's too many teams. But I love the wild card games. I know it was a short-lived experiment in MLB, but Tass, they were exciting games. If you go back and look, it's a small sample, but if you go look back at each individual game, all the games were fairly close. There were some really exciting finishes. And I know a lot of baseball purists will say, well, baseball's not, it's not a single elimination game. It's meant to be played in a series. And sure, there's, you know, there's a lot of evidence to support that. Again, it's an opinion. But, you know, when you're adding the playoff game in, you're not diluting the playoffs, because you're just basically adding one playoff team. It's still the same number of playoff teams.
You're still adding a playoff team, because those teams in the wild card, which moved to a 3-game series from a single game elimination, those were teams in the playoffs. I mean, they have a shot to win the whole thing, and I think that's what you're saying as far as the interest level goes, and I think it's even more interesting than basketball, because a 9 or 10 seed isn't going to win the championship, but a 7 seed in baseball could. They could go on a run.
Yeah, absolutely. And if, again, like it's only a 1-year sample size, but look at last year. I mean, the Phillies, I think, were a 6 seed, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah. You know, a couple hundred win teams got knocked off. That's exciting. I just like the idea of a single elimination game. I think it works in MLB. I think it works in this format. And also, too, it kind of just adds the idea that more teams will go for it, which I think is good. More teams will go for it, but you're still only having six playoff teams. Even if a team's on the fringe, you know, let's say they're two or three games out at the All-Star break, they're like, you know, like we have an outside shot at the seventh seed. Like we only got to win one game. And once you get into the MLB playoffs, people say it time and time again, like it's an absolute crapshoot. You just kind of got to get into the dance. So I like the excitement of a single play-in game. I think it's good. I think there's really no drawbacks to this at all. I mean, maybe I'm being a homer because this is my own rule, but I like this. I don't know, Tess, what do you think?
I don't like it, Joel. I don't think you need I don't think you need another team in the playoffs. I know you're saying that there's still six teams in the playoffs because those six teams, I guess you're going with the new rule of a three-game set once you get into the playoffs. But still, this is another team that can win the championship, so they're still in the playoffs if they do win, right? And I don't think you have the problem right now where teams aren't going for it. I think the addition to have six teams in each league, like we look up and down the standings. We're recording this in the middle of the season now. Hardly any teams are out of it right now. And so I don't think that's a problem. I think if you add another game, the one and two seeds have to wait even longer to start. And they already wait a day after the playoffs and then wait for a three-game set to happen between the three and six and four and five seeds. So they're waiting for like 5-6 days. I may be speaking as an Atlanta homer, which happened in 2022, where they waited. They waited for the Phillies, as you just mentioned, to win their series. And then they got hit because it was taking too long. So I don't like that gap. Also, both teams in this instance, 6 versus 7, they got to use a top pitcher for this game, right? So that kind of hurts them when they go play the three seed in a three game set as well. So I mean, you're penalizing the six seed in that way, because if they were able to go play their three game set without having to play the single game, they could throw their ace. I mean, that's also a factor when they get to the championship series and all that, because they have to play that three game set. So you could just say, oh, go get the one and two seed and get a bye. But I don't know. You want? I just think you're diluting it a little bit. You're adding a single elimination game. It's totally fun, but I kind of like the idea of baseball. You know, six is good. Six is a good number.
Yes, but it just set like put a bow on this. 1, 3, 5, 7. Perfect. You got a single elimination game, a best of three, a best of five, and then a best of seven. That's just smooth. I don't know. I love the wild card game. I think that's, you know, why I'm so kind of passionate about this. But I get what you're saying.
What about the weight?
You know, to that point.
Yeah. What about the weight? What about the Braves?
It's just an extra day. I think you're putting more stock into this than I am. It's just maybe 1 or 2 days. I don't think it's going to make a big difference one way or the other. But to your point about how you're penalizing the 6 and 7 teams, it was the same thing when the wild card elimination game, you know, teams had to adjust their rotation because they were going to use their ace in that game as well. So, you know, you would just have to do it for one more game. I don't think that's really a big deal. That's not a deal breaker for me in this.
Yeah. Now you're veering into basketball, which I know we're taking the rules from, but now 7 of 15 teams making the playoffs, even though you don't want to call it the playoffs. And that's a big number. It's a big number. Everybody can make the playoffs. Maybe at one point you'll have teams going the other way where they don't have to try as hard to get into the playoffs because everybody's making the playoffs, Joel.
Okay,
you're right.
That.
I'm stretching.
I don't know about
I'm
that.
Stretching. Yeah, I'm reaching. But I don't know. We got enough teams that can go win it all. We had the Phillies. Maybe I'm just bitter about last year where the Braves. I went and watched game one of that first round series. It was a three-game series. It wasn't a three-game series. It was the NLDS five-game set. Braves had to wait. They had to wait for the Phillies to finish theirs. And, it was like a week It was like 5 days. I'm exaggerating, but still, felt like a week. And then they came out extremely rusty. So I don't know. I mean, that's my bitterness coming through, I guess. All right, moving on. Another rule or process, I guess, as far as this last one goes, that MLB can adopt from the NBA. Division winners don't automatically get top seeds. I'm digging this one, Joel. Explain.
I think the NBA did a great job with this. Now, Tess, you're going to have to help me out. Do you know when they got rid of this? Because this wasn't always the rule. This was something that changed, I feel, within the last 5 or 10 years. Because before, it was every divisional winner. It was like 1, 2, 3. And there were some teams with an inferior record but had a higher seed. Am I correct in that?
Yeah, well, it was about a decade ago now. Not even. Yeah, it's about, I think, about a decade ago where the rule changed. The NBA used to have a rule where the division winner could finish no lower than the 4 seed. First, it was the top three.
Oh, okay.
Then it moved down to the 4 seed. And now they've gotten rid of that. So they can just be seeded anywhere.
I love it. I love it for a couple of reasons. One, it incentivizes winning. You know, I think that goes without saying. But take, you know, if you had that rule in place right now, the AL and the NL Central are just weak divisions. The New York Yankees, who are last place, would be first place in the American League Central. I want to see the best teams in the playoffs, as I'm sure all sports fan, baseball fans want to. So if you're just going straight seeding based on records, I think it's a great idea. And another benefit of this is that you're going to have a higher chance or higher probability of getting more divisional series in the playoffs, which I think is great. You know, I would love to see, you know, Jays, Yankees, Red Sox, Yankees. Maybe not everyone would like that, but I think divisional playoff series are very exciting to watch. So there's a higher probability when you're just going based on seeding. But yeah, it incentivizes winning, which I think you need to do.
Yeah, I totally am with you on this. It only makes sense with weak divisions like the AL and NL Central, especially because of the weighted schedule. When you play your weak division more and you're still a weak winner of that division, it just proves that you're not one of the top 6 or 7 teams or 20 teams. I don't know how many you want to expand it to, but go ahead. What were you going to say?
Well, I wanted to ask your opinion. Like, has there been a noted change? Have you noticed a big change in terms of the quality of the playoffs, the excitement of the playoffs, since they went away from this, you know, divisional where it's just basically straight seeding? Do you feel it's a more exciting playoff product, or is there not much of a change at all? I'm asking you.
No, there's not much of a change at all, but the difference is in basketball, what would happen would be like a team that, you know, wins, let's say they win the Northwest Division and they're, you know, only have the 5th best record in the conference. They're not going to win the championship anyway. It's unlikely in basketball. Mm-hmm. The higher seeds tend to win. That's what happens. So in baseball, there's more likelihood of us, you know, Cincinnati Reds or a Twins running the table. So I think it would be smart to give them a bit of a disadvantage and seed them accordingly and put them on the road, essentially. That's what we're talking about here. A team would drop from the 3rd seed to, you know, the 5th or 6th seed. And usually, even if you were a bad team, a bad division winner, you would still make the playoffs in this scenario. Anyways, you would probably be the 6th best team. But you're penalized, and your penalty is you got to go on the road and win.
Okay, I mean, I could be down with that. I mean, me personally,
yeah. I say that now, but the Twins, you know, currently as we look at the standings when we're recording this here in July, would be out of it. They wouldn't make the playoffs. In the AL, but the Brewers would. in the NL would drop from a division winning seed to from the third seed to the sixth seed.
Yeah. I mean, that's fine. I mean, statistically speaking, I feel like you're still going to have every division probably represented. There might be some outliers like this year with weak central divisions, but yeah, the best teams should be rewarded. Like good teams, I feel under the current format, good teams are still penalized and inferior teams benefit from this. Most notably, like you said, the Twins who, you know, like they're going to get home field advantage. The central winners, whether it's Minnesota or Cleveland or whoever, and they're going to have to play the sixth seed. And all day, I will take the sixth seed over whoever plays the AL Central winner because they're just going to get absolutely smoked. I feel so. I don't want to see that. I would rather see a more even matchup between two better teams. The Twins just don't deserve it. They just don't deserve it. Or the Central winner doesn't deserve it.
You say that they get absolutely smoked, but as we just talked about with the Braves, the Dodgers, 100-win teams can go down pretty quickly. So you never know. So I do think if you're not going to be a great team like in the AL, the Twins or the Brewers, let's say, and you have a weighted schedule that benefits you because you're playing, you know, weaker teams more, I'm with you. Reseed it. I don't see the problem with that. Listen, baseball has been willing to make changes. We saw what happened with the universal designated hitter rule. It took some time. They wanted to be traditional. The NL, you know, there's the traditionalists that wanted to keep the game pure and have hitters hit. We saw what happened this year in 2023 with the rule changes to speed up the game. I think what's happening here in this instance and this specific reseeding things is just it's taken a little bit longer than it should, but I think they'll catch up. All right, that was a blast. Anything else on the rules or the processes you want to talk about, or should we move on, because we got some fun random questions to discuss, Joel?
I'm good. Let's move on to the next part here.
Yeah, these are random basketball/MLB questions that we want to discuss. Let's do the classic. Can this guy play this sport? We'll start with NBA players who could play in MLB. What do you got, Joel?
I went with Zach LaVine. I feel he could make the transition from NBA to MLB. Couple of reasons. I mean, he's a very just naturally athletic guy. He played in the MLB softball celebrity game. I think he had a home run, too, if I'm not mistaken. He looks like a baseball player, Tass. I saw him wearing that Mariners jersey. Man, he's just got the look. He's not – you need to be – like basketball, obviously, height and size is critical to being successful, like in most positions, not all. Baseball, not so much. You need to be quicker, a bit smaller. You know, there's some bigger guys, sure, but – obviously the body frame is a bit different if you want to, you know, be a good baseball player. I feel Zach LaVine kind of has that body to me as well. He's got a great sprint speed, Tass. I looked it up. I saw a clip of him on Twitter. He had a sprint speed of 17.9 miles per hour while dribbling. He could rob home runs with that great vertical. He could stick him in the outfield, which is where I would probably put him. He could be robbing home runs all day. This is hard to pick because the skill sets needed to play each sport, I don't think there's a lot of crossover. I mean, obviously, other than just natural athleticism and good hand-eye coordination, I can't really think of anything else that translates. Could you?
Well, as far as crossover, Zach LaVine's got one. I think, you're already throwing a position, put him in a position in the outfield. I think this was great. The standard athlete stuff translates, I think, with Zach LaVine because he actually trained to be a baseball player when he was a kid. You just brought me back during the pandemic when the broadcasters were looking for stuff to televise. They had a horse competition when... They went to athletes' homes to film. Like, everybody was filming separately. So they went to Zach LaVine's home in the Seattle area, I believe that's where he's from, and I think this was his childhood home. There was batting cages in his childhood home. That maybe it was his, maybe it's not his childhood. Anyways, it was his house, and there were batting cages. He trained, so that was his goal. So you're not wrong. That's an absolute great one. I've got a bunch of guys who could cross over, I think. Pat Connaughton, for those who don't know, maybe you don't, he was a draft pick of the Baltimore Orioles. He plays for the Milwaukee Bucks now, but he was a fourth-round pick of the Orioles, and he actually played in their minor league system. I do believe this is correct, he took home a $400,000 bonus but did not return to the sport after being drafted by the Bucks the following year. So he could hurl, and nice job. Double dipping there, grabbing a 400K and then moving on. I think Donovan Mitchell, a superstar. He loves baseball. I think similar to Zach LaVine, had dreams of being a big leaguer, but he suffered a broken wrist in high school. A broken wrist? Did I say list? It was definitely a wrist that he suffered, a fractured wrist in high school. And his dad was a minor league player and works for the Mets, so there's a connection there. This one is hilarious. Anthony Edwards, star player for the Minnesota Timberwolves, he says he can play all sports. Now, this is just a little anecdotal, a little hearsay, but it's anecdotal from his mouth. So he said he can throw 100 miles per hour. He had this exchange with UpRocks. I'm going to recite you the interview. Somebody asked him, "You said you could play in the MLB right now. Do you still think that's true?" "Oh, for sure." "What makes you say that with such confidence?" "You got to give me a month to get my arm back right." "A month? I got to get my arm back right. I was a pitcher, but it'd be hurting my elbow. So once I get my arm back right, we good." "Okay, so how fast are you throwing it?" "If I throw right now?" "If you throw right now, and I'll give you a month." "If you give me a month, it might be 100. 100 miles per hour. 100! "You're lying your ass off." No. "I swear to God, I want to see a video of you in a month after you train." "Nah, I'm not going to train for that." What would you throw right now then? 92 or 93? 92 right now? "Yep, for sure." So, I don't know. Anthony Edwards says he can throw. I believe him. We got Kevin Love, who's the king of the outlet pass, who does knuckle push-ups, or used to do it before he broke his, knuckle. But, I think he can throw pretty hard. We have Tracy McGrady, retired NBA player. But if you remember, he worked with Roger Clemens, because he's from Texas, back in the day after his MLB career was done. He had MLB dreams, and he pitched for the Sugar Land Skeeters of the Atlantic League.
I did not know that.
Yeah, of the Atlantic League, way back when. This was a while. He made their opening day roster. He didn't have a great Sugar Land Skeeters career, but he made their roster in his debut. He pitched 1 2/3 innings. In July, he started the Atlantic League All-Star Game. Sounds a little gimmicky to me, where he recorded his first strikeout, but after the game, he retired. So there's a little hope, and Michael Jordan's career batting average of just over 200 in the minors should be respected more, because it's hard to hit a baseball. So those are all my NBA to MLB connections. But let's go the other way, Joel, unless you got another one, because that one was great.
Just the one, Tass. I had to go through a lot of Googling, a lot of reading through. I was like, most athletic NBA player, I had to do like a bunch of Google searches, and then that's how I landed on Zach LaVine. So I'm just going to go with him.
See, it's interesting, because like, you can get by in MLB without being a ridiculous athlete. You can DH. So maybe we're missing some guys deeper on rosters that deeper on NBA rosters that can just bop.
I just don't know enough about the current NBA product for me to comment further on it. Yeah, you know better than me.
That's all I got. I like how you called it the current NBA product. Let's
Kevin Durant. Kevin Durant's a huge baseball fan too.
Yeah.
Would he? I've seen him playing catch in Manhattan Beach there in California. I think he's a big baseball fan. I don't know.
Is he too big, Joel? Is he too big at 6'11"? To be pulling
there's
it off.
Well, I don't know. Maybe that could be an advantage. Maybe you could be a pitcher, you know, get that angle, you know, get that nasty slider going.
Now we're talking.
Kevin Durant, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, we're talking pitchers for sure. Too big a strike zone to be a hitter, but like jumping the other way, Randy Johnson, you know, he could get him on the hill. Maybe he could ball. That brings us to our next question. Which MLB player could play in the National Basketball Association, Joel? Now, this is your expertise. You take it away, because this is a flip. I'm sure you've got a few guys who could go to the NBA, and I'm the one who only has one that can jump over to the NBA, but what do you got?
Okay. Well, Taz, sort of disappointed. I've just got one player for this one as well.
Damn it. I misremembered our conversation mere hours before recording this.
That's okay. But to answer this question, it starts and ends with my boy, Trey Turner.
Ooh.
He's 6'2", and I want to put Trey Turner at point guard because the average height for a point guard in the current NBA is between 6 feet and 6'3". So in terms of height, he kind of fills that. He's a very athletic dude, very fast. He's got one of the best sprint speeds. I don't know if speed is necessarily a big advantage in basketball, Tass. Is it? I honestly have no idea.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Come on. You've seen a basketball game.
I have, but I just never noticed like dudes who are like super fast. I guess it's an advantage. Yeah. But very fast.
You have to have a handle. Can Trey Turner handle the ball? You bet. I mean, you called him.
Yeah, he's got good hands.
He's got hands.
And I feel he's got a very good baseball IQ. Now, why would that translate to basketball? I just think he's like that would translate to court vision. He's an excellent base runner. He's very cerebral. I feel like he looks at other player, like he kind of looks at things and takes advantage of mistakes that the other team makes. I think that would be a great quality for him to have as a point guard. So, yeah, I'm going to pick Trey Turner as a point guard. Put him in a Sixers City Connect test. He's looking good.
And he's slick with his jerseys. He's slick with his hands. Every third show, I like calling back to an earlier show we had this season where you said he is the slickest player in MLB. I also I misquoted you. I thought you said he's the sickest player in MLB, but that was just another instance of me saying something incorrectly. But, I think he is slick with it. He's slick with his hands. So you need speed, Joel, but you also, if you're a point guard, you need to be able to handle or shoot a lot at the very least. I think there's a possibility there. You mentioned guys who take advantage of situations. You made me think Ronald Acuna, watching him when pitchers have their back turned. Takes an extra couple steps off second. Boom! He's at third base. So I wonder if Ronald Acuna could translate. A ridiculous athlete as well. Sometimes watching him play right field for the Braves, likes to take his time. It was Corbin Carroll's triple, ball ricocheting in the corner. He just took his time chilling to get there. Basketball players, they like to change their pace and chill out at times. So I think Acuna, he's definitely flashy like some NBA players, could fit that bill. Mentally, I think, like you said, taking advantage of situations would be good. But my guy, in a similar vein, would be Ellie De La Cruz, because Ellie De La Cruz got all the tools. He says he is the fastest man in the world. Sprint speed, as you were talking about, he's got that. He's got the height. He could, be a guard / wing. And I also read this from Joey Votto about his teammate Ellie De La Cruz, and that linked Ellie to basketball, and I can't unlink them. Joey Votto said Ellie De La Cruz is Vince Carter, and that really hit me at home, being from Toronto. Growing up and really falling in love with basketball when Vince Carter came to the Raptors. Joey Votto is basically saying, like, Ellie De La Cruz is He's just another, he's just a phenomenon. He is a different type of baseball player. Like Vince Carter was a different type of basketball player that is so ridiculously athletic, could play any sport. I think you could flip Vince into a baseball player. Ellie could be flipped into a basketball player. So I'm buying that, Joel. I think he's got all, he's got every tool. I'm sure he can dunk. I'm like 99% sure he can dunk because he can fly. I don't know if he's ever picked up a basketball, but he's there. And just to continue on with Joey Votto and his basketball lingo, he said, in basketball, they call it a make or miss league. It's like bat or bench here in baseball. Joey Votto, a big basketball fan, it sure seems like.
I like it.
And he grew up in Toronto. We're similar ages, so he was taken away by Vince Carter's athleticism, just like he's taken away by Ellie De La Cruz. And he's being a great teammate with Ellie De La Cruz. He understands that the next generation is here, and he's kind of moving out of the way for Ellie and the next generation of all those young Reds coming up.
Guys tend to think looking sharp means starchy Oxfords and stiff chinos rather than effortless comfort, but it's possible to have it both ways. I'm all set for summer thanks to Mack Weldon. The Vesper polo shirt is so breathable you can wear it on the golf course, but it looks classy enough to wear to a party. The Maverick Tech chino short is ultra flexible, and the Pima crew neck t-shirt is perfect for those casual weekends. There's no need to be uncomfortable in your clothing ever again. Some guys just want to look good without calling attention to themselves. Mack Weldon apparel gives you understated good looks for understated confidence. Mack Weldon clothes are designed to fit your style and the demands of modern life. They look like regular clothes but feel like the latest in modern comfort. They're the go-to choice for guys who want to look great without even trying. Breathable underwear that keeps you cool, dry, and comfy all day. Crazy comfortable but elevated sweatpants. An upgraded classic polo with antimicrobial silver threads. An ultra-soft antimicrobial tee for when you need to stay fresh longer. That's the Silver Crew Neck T-shirt. Get timeless looks with modern comfort from Mack Weldon. Go to MackWeldon.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code MLBSHOW. That's MackWeldon.com. Promo code MLB Show.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's the little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next, you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Visit DirecTV.com. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
Moving on to this final question before we get to some trivia, Joel. What is something MLB can learn from the NBA?
I think there's a couple things. One of the things that NBA has done for a long time, and I feel of all the four major sports leagues in North America, they've done this the best, is they were very good at getting out in front of utilizing and harnessing social media and the sports media just to market their product and to market their sport and to connect with fans, but specifically young fans. I remember when Vine, RIP Vine, miss it, love it. But NBA utilized that extremely well, and I feel that was a big part of their success and connecting with younger fans. NBA, I feel, has always been the young, cool sport. Even like as a baseball fan, I'm like, oh man, NBA players are so cool. They're stylish. They showcase their personalities. They're very funny. They're outgoing. And I really, really like that. Baseball, it's getting much, much, much better, but they need to take more cues from the NBA in terms of just how to, you know, showcase their game and utilize social media. For the longest time, Tass, you know, even really not that long ago, like 5-6 years ago, you would go on social media, you would go on YouTube and you would type in baseball, just some key search words, and like nothing would come up, or it would just be a bunch of like old talking heads about just generic talking points. And I mean, like, okay, that's all right once in a while. There's still a bit of that, but it's a like you didn't really see that in the NBA. You've got the NBA on TNT, I forget, but you've got Ernie and Shaq and Charles and Kenny. They've got a great chemistry. It just always feel like it's constantly being marketed towards younger people, but you build those grassroots fans. Those guys grow up. They're connected to the game. You've got lifelong fans. MLB clearly has an older fan base, although I saw an article recently, the average age has dropped by several years. I feel that's encouraging. So they've done a great job utilizing social media and media. And the other thing too, Tass, is they're able just to market their stars very well. Now, I want to ask you a question. I don't know if this is an elephant in the room with baseball, but a lot of, even though both are very international leagues, the players who come over and play in the NBA, they're media savvy and their command of the English language is very good. Now, I say that because a lot of the stars, a lot of the exciting, amazing players in baseball just simply don't speak English well, or they choose not to. And that's fine. I'm not being critical of that. But Tass, I'm talking about, like, I can connect with Michael Jordan. I can connect with LeBron. I can even connect with some international players because I understand what they're saying. They're able to kind of convey their thoughts. Baseball's not like that. Do you think, Tass, a language barrier is part of this in terms of connectivity and marketing their stars? I'm curious to see what you think.
I don't think so. I think
okay.
All the your primary part of your argument there with social media, just highlighting stars, the personalities and all that, can be done without even speaking the language. For instance, Shohei Ohtani, a superstar, doesn't have to say a thing. He says it all with his body language. Let's jump over to Nikola Jokic with the Denver Nuggets. He speaks English very well, but he doesn't like doing it, doesn't do a lot of media. Going to Denver and seeing him in the NBA Finals, he just wanted to get off the mic as soon as possible. But number one, winning solves everything. But also, he's just his style of play. I think transcends any sort of language barrier. He speaks sort of quietly, and sometimes it's a little difficult to understand. But like guys, like we just mentioned, Ellie De La Cruz is a damn superstar. I mean, he's taken over the No Bunts part of the Athletic Baseball Show YouTube channel because everything he does is amplified and is fantastic, and he speaks through a translator. I don't really think that's a problem with social media. You can get these guys on camera. You can get Ellie on camera. He's smiling. He does say some things in English. Like he said, I'm the fastest man in the world. When he wants to say things in English, he does. But with social media, you put the camera on them. Producers, the people who control or who run the social media accounts with each team just has to get them on camera. And I think that's what you said at the beginning. That is the issue. Although it's gotten way better, and it's gotten me back into the game, frankly, part of it. Right. I loved baseball a long time ago, and part of it, the attraction and why, as you said, the average age is getting younger is just because they're showcasing it better in terms of production, in terms of the game, and through social media. So, yeah, I don't think it's the language barrier. I don't think that's a problem.
But when I like sports, professional sports is driven by superstars. And I feel like I agree with everything you said, but what I'm talking about, like beyond their respective sport, Michael Jordan, LeBron James, Steph Curry, these guys are huge stars, obviously on the court, but they're in commercials, they're in movies. They've got a lot of things that, increases their visibility outside of the sport, like their household names. You and I, like, we like baseball, so we know who Ellie De La Cruz is, we know who Ohtani is, but like outside of baseball, do you think Ohtani maybe, but do you think a lot of people know who Mike Trout is? Do you think a lot of people know who Ellie De La Cruz is, who Ronald Acuna Jr. is? Absolutely not. Like, they're stars in their respective sports, and like, okay, that's fine. But to me, like, I'm talking beyond that, endorsements, movies, more awareness. Baseball doesn't have that right now. They don't have the guy with the talent that matches the personality. Like Trout, they got the talent, they didn't have the personality. Otani, they've got the talent, his personality, you know, you decide. Harper has the personality. He's talented, but he's not the best player. Like LeBron, for the longest time, had the talent and the personality. And I think that was huge. Jordan, talent, personality. Baseball just hasn't had that guy. Griffey, maybe that's the guy who I can think of off the top of my head. Can you think of anyone?
Well, I think when you throw out the names like Acuna and De La Cruz and Trout, well, it's too early, I think, for De La Cruz to be throwing that light. I'm with you on
the Acuna
because he does. It's an interesting case study because he's got the personality and he's got the game. Yeah. And he's starting to do it more on a regular basis. I mean, the injuries slowed him down. So I think that's a fair one to question. Trout didn't have the personality and wasn't part of, like, his great years, I didn't think coincide. They didn't coincide with MLB doing a better job of showcasing their players. I think, yeah, he's a victim of that. I think Shohei, though, really, when you're talking about faces of the game, and we had this conversation plenty when I was in Denver for the NBA Finals about Nikola Jokic and whether or not he could be the face of the NBA. Really, the difference between Jokic and Ohtani, even though Ohtani speaks through a translator and Jokic does not, it's just the willingness to do commercials. And all that, and be fed a few lines and be willing to also be on social media. Jokic was not. Ohtani, I think, has the ability to transcend and to get into homes of everybody around the world because I think he's willing to do it. You could tell me if I'm wrong, but I think he's willing to be in commercials. And that's really the step. I think he's got the talent and he just has to be willing to put a McDonald's hamburger in his hand and then
exactly
and then he's that, there and then he can be Jordan exactly and then it. He can be Curry and LeBron. Listen, it's also just part of the NBA machine that does it oh so well, and so I think MLB is learning from NBA.
yeah, absolutely. Yeah, don't disagree with any of that. I'm a passionate baseball fan. I just want there to be that guy because baseball has lost so much ground in popularity over the last 20, 25 years. Baseball used to see baseball highlights on ESPN all the time. It was covered. There was much more buzz about it. And it's just in the last, like I said, 20, 25 years, it's just lost so much ground. It's starting to get some of that back, but I feel it would come back with a superstar, you know, who's playing in October, who's got the charisma, who's got the talent. Maybe language isn't necessarily a big issue. And like you said, you can stick them in a commercial. There's ways, you know, from creating a commercial to add elements of humor and just feed them a couple lines. I get it. So there's ways around that. But I hope Ohtani's that guy. I think he is, but it remains to be seen at this point.
Yeah. And when you're comparing Jordan, LeBron, and I throw Curry into that mix, the late Kobe Bryant was as well. I think those were basically four guys when we're talking about basketball that were the faces of the league. But I mean that's a long period of time where there was only four faces. So that's a long, long period of time. They don't come about frequently. Is what I'm getting at. And so, yeah, there's been a few faces of the league, but there's only one at a time. And so, yeah, LeBron and Curry have kind of shared it. Before that, there was Kobe, and then it was a while before that it was Jordan. And so all that to say is it can't be Acuna, Trout, and De La Cruz and Ohtani at the same time. It can only be one. And I think we're veering into the Ohtani territory. He just really, it just has to be him wanting to do commercials and wanting to do some media. And he seems willing to do media, even though he speaks through a translator. It really, it's just, it's visibility. It's, he obviously has the talent. It's just willingness to sell some stuff and to be seen. Yeah. By different people who just don't watch baseball because they're seeing him in ads, or whatever. But, yeah, I think he has the best shot of any, and I think he's different than a Nikola Jokic that we just talked about in the NBA because he's not willing to sell anything. Well, yeah, Ohtani could, and somebody like Trout, who didn't win or hasn't won. I mean, that's we haven't seen him make highlights in October. So that's also another part of it, which, yeah, you got to go out and win. So I guess Griffey is, yeah, the latest one, but he also didn't win either. So there's, yeah, there's a bunch of factors, I guess, is what we're getting at.
I've just got one more quick question for you, Tess. Just purely anecdotal. Do you think the average American sports fan can truly connect and say, like, he's the guy, but it's not an American?
Yeah, I don't think that's a problem. And I can only speak for the NBA. No, there hasn't been one quite yet, but Giannis Antetokounmpo could be that guy. And, you know, he speaks English and does all his interviews in English, but he's a non-American. I don't think that's a problem. I think it can trans in today's global game. The international game of baseball is, I don't think it's a problem.
Okay.
And I think if there's something that the NBA can learn from MLB is the international game. We saw the World Baseball Classic, how great it was. I think if there's a way for NBA to somehow make uniform rules with international play and potentially with women's play to sort of just make it uniform across the board, that would really help. Because we go see World Baseball Classic, all the rules are the same, obviously. You don't even have to think about it. But in international play, the size of the court's different. The three-point line is different. There's rules about playing above the rim, that you can tap a ball off the rim in international play. The game duration is different. It's shorter in international play. So I think that would be something that the NBA should somehow do. Now, they obviously get into a tournament and they figure it out. They play by international rules. But I think it would help the international tournaments if everybody played by the same rules. That's one thing that, you know, watching the World Baseball Classic was phenomenal. And so I think that's a small part of it. But do you have an answer for whether or not somebody, a non-American, can be the face of baseball?
Hard for me because I'm not an American. I'm not there. It's just a hyperactive sports market there. There's just so many sports stars there. But Tess, I don't know. I think it's, I don't think it's a question of like nationalism. I don't want it to be something negative. I'm not saying that. I just feel that like Ohtani connects with Japanese people because obviously he's Japanese and he's a star. People gravitate towards their own people. I just think that's just a natural thing. Obviously, America is where the best come to play. So, you know, you're kind of spoiled in that way. But just for the average American fan, I don't know, Tess. I'm not saying it's a deal breaker, but I think they're just going to naturally gravitate towards American players for better, for worse, and for whatever their own reasons are. I don't think it's, they're like, oh, I don't like international players. I want to like, I don't think it's anything like that. I just think it's a natural thing.
We're a melting pot, Joel. Everybody can be an American. They're allowed. And there's enough fans.
Absolutely.
There's enough fans to be fans of everything. I'm sitting here with my man, JD, who's a fan of pickleball. There can be a pickleball star. There are YouTube stars of you know, every stripe. I don't think the non-American part, I don't think is an issue. But anyway, let's move on because I want to get quizzed. I want to get stumped. Joel, you've got NBA, MLB trivia. I don't know what you're giving us, but let's get to it.
Okay, five questions, Tass. Who is the only player to win a World Series and NBA title?
Oh, man. This one's supposed to be easy?
Yeah, I don't. I've never heard of this guy before, and he did it a long time ago. But he won. Okay, he won a World Series with the Milwaukee Braves, and then three consecutive titles with the Boston Celtics from 1959 to 1961.
Sam Jones.
No, Gene Conley.
The Conley years.
Ring a bell?
Nope. Okay. One with the Braves, and then no.
That's pretty impressive. He's the only guy to do that. Okay, I think you'll fare a bit better in the second one here, Tass. Little bit of a Canadian connection.
Okay.
Two players have played in the NBA and for the Toronto Blue Jays. Who are they?
Danny Ainge, of course.
That's one.
Now, I know of somebody who played in the NBA, was drafted by the Blue Jays, but I don't know if he ever played. Scott Burrell?
No.
Okay. So, yeah, Scott Burrell was won a championship with Jordan, was drafted by the Blue Jays, but decided to play basketball. So this guy played in the NBA and played for the Jays.
This one. Played for a couple teams in MLB, but he played for the Jays.
What year are we talking?
He came to the Jays system in the late 90s, and he pitched for a few years in the early 2000s. He was a pitcher.
Man, not... Yeah, I don't know. Should I know this?
Mark Hendrickson.
Whoa! I mean, I remember the name, but I don't remember his story.
I don't know which NBA team. He started out in the NBA, and he played a couple seasons, and then he was basically playing baseball in the off season, and then just ended up making the switch over to MLB. And that's actually where he played most of his professional athletic career.
Wow.
Bounced around to a couple teams.
Thank you. Yeah, 6'9" power forward in basketball. Yeah, had a few years in the late 90s, but not a ton of work in the NBA. Scored 381 points. Mark Hendrickson, yeah, I remember the name, but okay, all right. Great questions, Joel. These are great.
I knew you were going to get Danny Ainge. I'm like,
I have his card.
That's a gimme.
I have his baseball card as a Blue Jay. Now, Scott Burrell, I think a lot of people don't know he was drafted by the Jays, as I hesitate when I say that. But yeah, I think that's true. But and then he got yelled at by Michael Jordan and won a championship.
Okay. Question number three, Tassies, don't get any easier.
Oh, boy.
On September 24th, 1972, the first outdoor NBA game was played. It was a preseason game between the Milwaukee Bucks and the Phoenix Suns, and it was played at a baseball stadium. Tass, name the city it was played in.
We're playing outdoor basketball.
1972 exhibition game between the Bucks and the Suns, and it was played at a baseball stadium.
What a question.
It's not in the United States, but it's not far from the United States. Bit of a hint.
It was played in a baseball stadium?
That's correct.
Not far from the United States. Okay, so we're showcasing the game in a nearby country of... Puerto Rico?
You are so warm, Tass. Put on oven mitts. You're close. What's the city?
What do you mean, what? Oh, so you want the city in Puerto Rico?
Yeah, I said the city, yeah.
Oh, San Juan?
That's right.
Nailed it. Okay. Sorry, I thought you asked for a country. All right. Wow, that was wild. Why did I guess Puerto Rico?
City, I'm probably going to butcher this name. Bithorn Stadium. I'm totally butchering that name, but anyway, yeah. It was the first outdoor NBA game played, and several have been played outdoors since at Indian Wells, Indian. Am I saying that right?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. So several outdoor games have been played since then, but that was the first one.
Wow. I don't know how, I guess, Puerto Rico. I think I saw you. You were maybe tipping your hand and pursing your lips there so I could see a pop, 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 pop. But
good eyes.
San
good
Juan.
Court vision test.
San Juan. Good great court vision. Call me.
Okay.
Call me Trey Turner.
I think the last two, I think you got a good shot. Tess, what was the name of the double A team Michael Jordan played for?
Oh, it's local. I'm here in Atlanta, Georgia. I recently went to Birmingham, Alabama. The Birmingham Barons.
Nailed it.
Yeah.
Nailed it. Birmingham Barons. Okay. All right, Tess, and last one. Since we're talking about basketball, in the movie, what was the name of the championship trophy in basketball? JD, feel free to join in. I don't know if you watched it.
I've never seen it.
Oh,
shocking.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay, but it's a championship trophy. Let's workshop this.
What was the name
of
the championship trophy they were playing for?
Does it have a cup in it? Or is it?
It does have a cup.
Okay.
It does have a cup.
Is there an animal? Is an animal a part of this?
No, it was named after, like, in the movie, the Trey Stone and Matt Parker, like, there's an older guy who takes a shining to them, and he's the one that funds the league, and they name it after his surname. So the cup.
The Snyder Cup.
Nah, good guess. The Denslow Cup.
Never would have gotten
the old Denslow Cup.
I don't know how I didn't get that. I'm just glad
that's
I got
it. That's a tough one. I wanted to make him bit obscure.
I don't remember.
Challenging, not too challenging.
No, that was a lot of fun. We got to watch that. Maybe we'll do an off-season film session.
Yeah.
Let's do it.
Yeah,
I'm down.
Got me wanting to watch that. All right, great stuff, Joel. You always kill with the trivia. Mark Hendrickson, Gene Conley, those will be names I'll
Gene
be.
Gene Conley, yeah,
I'll be
pretty cool claim to fame. Only do you think in our lifetime we'll ever see anything like that again? Do you think a guy win an NBA and an MLB title?
That's a good question. That's tough. The crossover is it's so few and far between. Probably not. Now these days when it's so specialized, you come out. That's a tough one. That's a real tough one. Guess not. Mm-hmm. Maybe Austin Ainge. I think Danny Ainge's son. I think he plays. Oh no, he's a basketball coach. He's old now. He's 40. Forget it. Forget I said anything. All right, that was fun. Great stuff, Joel. Great stuff, JD. We'll be back next Wednesday. Make sure you subscribe wherever you get your pods. The Athletic Baseball Show feed is where you can find No Bunts every Wednesday. And you can find No Bunts streaming live every Wednesday on the Athletic Baseball Show YouTube channel. Check out some shorter vids there as well. And our Instagram page. A lot of great stuff there. No_Bunts. For JD, for Joel, we'll see you next time.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic.
See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.